Here I am. My guest is David Sirita, and I don't want to discourage anybody from giving us sightings. Well, maybe in a way I do. We all know that millions of Americans have had sightings of the kind of craft that we're talking about tonight. But if it's possible, I'd like you to confine your questions for David to that which he's said, or Mr. Bushman has said, or the whole concept that we're talking about, so that we don't turn it into a sightings program. We all, in fact, I'm one of you. I've had two of what I would call major sightings. At any rate, this is fairly startling material, to be sure. And also, I'm going to be asking David in a moment whether any of the other disclosure community, any of the other people in the disclosure community, have yet interviewed Mr. Bushman. And if not, I would imagine after this program, they'll be hot on his trail. More in a moment. All right, David, I would like to ask if Mr. Bushman has done any one-on-one interviews on programs like this, or whether he's talked to any other disclosure folks.
I don't believe he's ever talked to anybody publicly yet. The interview he gave me was about almost an hour and 40 minutes of videotape, so mm-hmm. I've used very valuable segments in my film. But there's a lot more in there. In fact, there's some stuff that's really just over the top, shocking, that he's giving me. But he, you know, in the whole time I've known him, he hasn't told me anything over the phone, and on his emails are very brief. It's not until I went to meet him in person that he disclosed everything. So,
well, you say over the top, so over the top, shocking that you didn't necessarily even include it in the film. Now, was that because it was too shocking or too unbelievable to invalidate?
It took me a while to decide to put this in the film because it is so shocking. It's something that's going to happen on our planet that they all, you know, all these, you know, scientists know about, and they know when this thing is going to happen. And it's one of the reasons I believe he gave us anti-gravity. He wants us to have this. There's enough information here that engineers could go to work, and this could be common knowledge, this anti-gravity stuff. At least, like I said, canceling out a percentage of gravity would be. But the event that he talks about, and I'm trying to get confirmation on this, is, and this is in the film, he says that there is an asteroid, or he calls it a rock, that's going to hit us. And they know when it's going to hit us, and he gives us the date. It's about 2039. It's a long ways off. And it's not like the rock that ended the dinosaurs, but it's a fair-sized rock, and he said it will be many, many megatons of nuclear, you know, equivalency when it hits. And they know where roughly it's going to hit.
With everything else that's going on this planet right now, we might as well bring on a rock.
We may as well bring on a rock. But, you know, by then, he does state that we may have the ability to divert it. At that point, we may actually have the technology, and we probably already do, if everything else that Ben Rich is stating about Lockheed is correct, then we may already have the technology to divert it. But it's a fair-sized rock. He showed us a picture of it on camera, and it's definitely nothing small. And, you know, probably, I said, would it be bigger than Tunguska? And he just said many, many megatons of nuclear equivalency. So, you know, maybe if it hits, it could end. If you look at, you know, if for people who believe in the Book of Revelation, there is a section in there that talks about a star that hits the Earth, and I think it's called the Star of Wormwood or something like that. And
Wormwood, yes.
Yeah,
all right.
I mean, maybe
Mark
it.
In Philadelphia, you're on with David.
How are you guys? I will say, just on that last point, I can't imagine if it's that far out that we won't either ourselves be out there, or even more likely that the aliens aren't already sort of protecting the Earth from most incomings like that anyway. So, you know, I'll be surprised if that was to come in. But Mr. Bushman's patents online are fascinating. I've looked up and seen a bunch of different stuff, including really far out stuff like digital transmission of information through the output in the back of a jet, exhaust of jets.
Yeah, the exhaust plume detection.
Radiation-based, really wild, digital-based sort of exhaust plume, and then decoding on the other end so you can, you know, secretly download the information while, you know the U2's flying or whatever, which is fascinating stuff. I can't believe some of this stuff is out there when you start reading this material. I don't know why it wouldn't be kept black. But in any case,
yeah, it's all in the U.S. Patent Office. What's great about this guy is he's got a paper trail. You know,
yeah,
you
he can... is fascinating stuff online. I will say there's some other material now, some other interviews, but I'll be interested to see if what you have will hopefully be a more heavily or significantly weighted object than the coil that's shown in the levitation videos and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you – a question number one would be, is there a – why aren't you guys putting together some type of experiment? You know, it sounds like Tesla, Ed Leeds-Galen, and all this related stuff, you know, but on a larger scale. Why aren't you guys putting together maybe some more significantly weighted objects to show that on? Number
well, two. That's where this all goes next. I mean,
okay.
the knowledge is
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I know there's not a lot of time. I assume that you know, that's what goes on at all of our bases, and why, which leads to my second question or point, which would be a different answer to the question of why the general public wouldn't be made privy to the so-called anti-gravity, this type of information. I mean, the few who really pull the strings, you know, according to the significant information that's been out there that any of us can read, you know, would consider it the ultimate state secret and would want the U.S.'s adversaries to have at least a delay in terms of the time that they get it, just like happened with the Manhattan Project.
Let's you know, because those are great questions. I mean, I used to be a small defense contractor. I was president of High Energy Micro Devices, bomb detection. And the way things work with the military is when you get a contract, if it's useful for the military, they do an acquisition. The Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology puts out a call for proposals to either build or deliver existing technology. Now, if there's no need for an acquisition in their department, then they won't, you know, they won't deliver it. There are many things that are developed by the military that are ready for corporations to come in and take over. That's how things happen in our world. A lot of our best technologies came out of the military. And so that's what I think is happening here. I think there's enough information here, like I said, to cancel out a percentage of gravity for motor vehicles and so forth, that we can save an awful lot of energy on a national level. Now, as far as full, you know, I mean, heavier objects, I mean, you just have to think of these are nuclear-powered aircraft that are flying at 60,000 feet in the 1950s that he's disclosing, so you can't even imagine what we have today if we were doing that successfully in the 50s. So, yes, they have it. But typically the next step is, you know, defense contractors, if they leak out a little bit of technology, corporations step in, private investors come in. I'm going to be doing some tests. They're very interested in my designs that I actually have developed over the years. I think I found a way to recycle the radio photons that, you know, normally they're just throwing away, you know, to produce this anti-gravity effect. I mean, John Hutchison's Tesla coils that he's using essentially take electricity, energy, and they run it through Tesla coils, and it turns into radio waves, and it produces the effect. But where do all the radio waves go? You see, they're scattering into space. Now, if you can capture those, and I found a way to magnify and compress them and recycle them, then you don't need to keep dumping in tons and tons of energy to produce lift. The system gets self-perpetuating and much more efficient. And that is an idea. I don't know if they've thought of that, and I have exact designs on how that actually happens. So I don't know if we've gotten beyond using nuclear sources for very high energy formulas to produce lift. I think that there's a way to do it for a lot less energy.
Because one of
the things Boyd said is in the Roswell craft when they examined it is there was no evidence for any power source or electricity or requirements or light bulbs.
Right.
That's amazing.
Okay, let's go to Danny in Reno, Nevada. You're on with David.
Hi. How are you guys doing tonight?
Well,
I had a curious question. I know it didn't want to turn out to be a sightings, you know, thing, but it all correlates because I do believe what I witnessed was an actual test flight drill of several of these UFOs, and they were doing They were all doing similar test patterns on the ocean, and upon witnessing this, you know. We also noticed other UFOs in the area that this was covering, and they were doing some amazing. It was the night before New Year's Eve, and we were out a little past Malibu. And
Point Magoo?
Yeah, absolutely. Right in that cove there. It's called Deer Creek Canyon Road there. Absolutely.
What year?
It was the year of 97. It was going to be 98.
Mm-hmm.
It was the night before New Year's Eve.
There were tons of sightings in Topanga and the Palisades during those
years. During that time. Yeah, we actually also seen the the triangle one. And it actually, we were out in Malibu. We used to Baja around there on Mulholland. But that's getting away. But we also seen the triangle thing, and it actually interfered with our radio. But we've noticed we were mentioning like the radio's not on; it's the tape player. So, but anyway, yeah, we were seeing these, and they were doing all similar test flight patterns, and then it would all come back to the initial area that they were hovering at, and then we'd witnessed other several larger. At the time, they were like glowing, you know, lights, and so we were just blown away, fascinated, just beyond, you know. It was actually just changing their spectra of their religion. They had to like fight back, but they were consciously seeing this, you know. Some of my friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right, Danny, we appreciate it. Do you have a question?
The question is that okay? I had, and then after seeing this, that we basically were like X-rayed on our way out of the canyon. I got sick, and another larger craft came over us, and I absolutely, it was not, you know, from the government. It was the extraterrestrials, and I do believe they were. My question is, does any of his file or anything tell what kind of species that they're dealing with this?
All right. Let's take that as a question.
Well, the radiation, if he got sick, you know, like Betty Cash did, he was exposed to nuclear radiation, and that would mean a nuclear power supply, and I would say that was probably one of ours. I really don't believe they're using harmful radiation, you know, to go from one star system to another. They'd all be dead before they got here, so that's not a good sign. I would go in and get tested and see if you've gotten cancer or any kind of ill health effects from your experience.
Mm-hmm. Did he have anything to say about the alien species?
No, I didn't even ask questions like that because I think I will do that at another step, you know, in my friendship with him. So maybe he'll tell me that. I don't know if he will.
Okay. All right, but he knew all the information he was giving you was going to come out in a movie or come out on the radio or whatever.
He signed a release document that says all rights, so I have all rights to the interview. And, you know, there's a lot here. There's so much that I couldn't put all of it in the film.
Got it. Gary in Jacksonville, Florida, you're on with David Sarita. Hi.
Hey, Art. Hey, David. Hey, I've got two quick questions. As far as the Roswell incident, I've seen many documentaries on that. Some of them say there were two crafts. Most of the ones I hear are one. Now, if you're saying that we shot one down, why did Mac Brazel have to contact the police and the authorities and the military to come out there? You would think they would have been on it. And the second question I had, have you ever heard of an alien that was supposedly working with the military named J-Rod?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of the case of the J-Rod. It's another one of these witnesses at Area 51 who had contact with an alien. But, you know, as for Roswell, remember, if you look at all of the mass sightings all over the country, as I mentioned earlier in the show, there was way more than one craft. I mean, there were nine of them at Edwards Air Force Base on July 8th. And there's actually a case in North Hollywood on July 9th, which is very interesting. So there were cases all over the country. So, you know, did they shoot down one or two of them? Why didn't the aliens shoot back? I mean, there's a lot of questions that start flying. You just have to think of when we send, you know, a probe to Mars, do we arm it with nuclear weapons in case we run into aliens? No. We
right. Okay. I just only ever heard of, you know, one or two on Roswell on that day.
No. There's lots of there's three. There's one in the plains of St. Augustine. There's the ones at Roswell. And then there's the one in, what's it called, Socorro, New Mexico.
Yeah,
there's three crash sites. So it's possible there are numerous saucers that went down.
Okay. Andrew in Richland, Washington. You're on with David Sarita.
Hi. I have a question. I recently moved up to Washington from Southern California. I was located in the a little place called Antelope Valley. It had we had Edwards Air Force, NASA, Lockheed, Skunk Works, all that around. And at night you would see stuff in the air, unexplained. And during the days, you would see I've seen weird things. They would test all the experimental airplanes and stuff out there. My question is pretty much, it, with you talking to Mr. Bushman, was there any discussion that in that area that they were housing and developing and possibly even testing out extraterrestrial aircraft? Because that area where I moved from was, they did a lot of experimental testing with
I really go into Edwards Air Force Base in my film. I mean, Gordon Cooper testified that his crew filmed a double lenticular, double lens-shaped flying saucer landing in the dry lake bed and then flying off. I believe that was one of ours. There's no way aliens, previously having shot them down, they would land in an unfriendly military environment. I believe what Cooper filmed was one of these nuclear-powered, you know, saucers. And then you have Major Bob White, who's test-flying the X-15 going Mach 6. He testifies on July 26, 1961 or 2, in Time magazine that he saw a, you know, rectangular-shaped gray object flying right next to him. He's going Mach 6. Who else can go Mach 6? You know what I mean? So that's all, also at Edwards Air Force Base. And I used to skydive out there. I did my high-altitude training at the base, so I'm familiar with it. I shot a lot of footage of the the B-1 bomber, the F-117 at the air show last summer. So I've got all that footage in the film.
David, for the record, he claims that which was at Area 51 was moved. Where does he say it was moved
He says candidly, Tooele, Utah. He said because of the encroachment of the public into Area 51, they moved to Tooele, Utah.
Well, I wonder then why they felt it necessary to do a more of a land grab around Area 51 to enlarge the area.
Yeah, I mean, you think about how close Vegas is to, well, it's not that close to Area 51, but, you know, it's funny, I went on Google Earth, and we went into Area 51, and you can see everything really clear on Google Earth. And what we found were there were two facilities where there was this purple-violet kind of aura around two different buildings. And it definitely was not a reflection from the sun because there were other buildings that were white that had similar kind of materials, and there was no purple aura. So this weird, very psychedelic-looking purple aura on two of the different facilities there. But he's saying candidly to Tooele, Utah in the film. And I just let that breeze by me, you know, so I can go on to the next subject. And people I know who live out there in Utah say that is in the middle of nowhere. I mean, they say nobody goes out there to Tooele, Utah. It's like southern New Mexico when you go to the very large array, you know, the telescope array down there. There's nothing down there. It's like that in Tooele, Utah. So it's a good place for them to test these things because nobody's going to get anywhere near them. They're nowhere near any cities, any towns. There's just nothing out there. So,
well, if people hear this, there might be people out there.
Well,
shortly.
But the thing is, if you look at how large the landmass is out there, where outside of Tooele, Utah? I mean, it's like, I don't know. But I have heard stories already from people who live in Utah that are friends of mine that they see strange things in that area, yes.
Okay. David Sirita is my guest, and we're talking about just all kinds of things. And I guess we're going to be hearing a lot more from Boyd Bushman. If I know the disclosure community after this, they'll be all over him. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. My guest is David Sirita. We'll get right back to him from sfgate.com. The following: top investigators of the Columbia space shuttle disaster are analyzing a startling photograph snapped by an amateur astronomer from a San Francisco hillside that appears to show a purplish electrical bolt striking the craft as it streaked across the California sky. The digital image is one of five snapped by the shuttle buff at roughly 5:53 a.m. Saturday as sensors on the doomed orbiter began showing the first indications of trouble. 7 minutes later, the craft broke up in flames over Texas. The photographer requested that his name not be used, said that he would not release the image to the public until NASA experts had time to examine it. Presumably that should have occurred by now, although there are several possible benign explanations for the image, such as barely perceptible jiggle of the camera as it took the time exposure. NASA's zeal to examine the photo demonstrates the lengths to which the agency is going to tap the resources of ordinary Americans in solving the puzzle. Now, by now, you would imagine that they would have examined and given a report on those photographs. David Sirita will be right back. Okay, David, we've covered a ton of material here. Is there anything in the program that we absolutely should have gotten on the air that we've missed or have not yet covered?
Well, just a little bit of finishing up. It's interesting what you just read, because I just got an email from a former shuttle Boeing Rockwell engineer, space shuttle engineer. He's very interested in the discussion about the purple corkscrewing wave. And I wanted to add that I interviewed an investment banker who was in Dallas the day the shuttle went down, and him and his lawyer were looking through their Zeiss binoculars, and they saw two flying saucers clearly, and one was maroon or purple in color, which would match the color of the purple corkscrewing wave. And is it possible, he suggests, that because he's read my whole report and he has seen all five photographs now, that it was actually a saucer that was pursuing the shuttle? And why? The question, of course, is why. Well, we know we've shot at them, but the question is, why would they shoot at the space shuttle if that is what we are actually dealing with here? And this particular person, you know, has a name, a Boeing Rockwell shuttle engineer, is very interested. I'm not going to give his name on the air because he wants to have a conversation with me. So.
Okay.
But that's who's listening out there.
All right. All right. Michael in Norfolk, Virginia, you're on with David Sirita.
Yes. Hi. I didn't hear if you said my name. This is Michael. David, I'm sure that if Art Bell had known 6 years ago, well in advance, that he was going to be given a map to two dead Bigfoots, he would have been able to plan well in advance how he would handle such a gift. Now, you've been given a gift, and I'm sure that it has occurred to you that it may have come from persons or a person much higher and much more influential than this gentleman scientist. And my question to you is this. Now, if you use this information, obviously they knew you would put it in a film. But thinking beyond that, you've been given this gift. What are you going to really do with it in order to qualify for very much more than what you've already been given? It takes planning. You have to think. You have to organize. You want to become energy czar? Who are you going to put around you to help you build the organization that will produce the technology in a responsible way so we won't set off a mafia war between major industries in this country, like the oil industry, trying to fight for their own survival in the face of this new technology that you're going to produce? You got to plan. You got to think. There's 32 hours of live programming on Coast to Coast every week. Let's say we give you 1 hour out of those 32 every week. What are you going to do with it? Give us your plan.
Well, it's a great question you're stating. I mean, do I have a plan? Yes. I think about this stuff every day. And in fact, I think who I'm in association with, there's no question that if this can be engineered. You know, here's the reason I believe, in a nutshell, probably why they haven't given this stuff out, the secret to anti-gravity, for so long. Why? Because it's so darn simple. It's like, you know, you pick up your cell phone every day and you use it, and you just take for granted, you know, the years of and generations of scientists that led to that, you know, revelation, and how simple it is to us. Yeah, you just pick it up, you plug it in, and you're talking to people all over the planet. I think when we really see how anti-gravity works, we're going to go, wow. I mean, anyone, you know, once you understand how it works, it's so simple. The mechanics of the technology is very simple, and I don't even think it's something you can control. Everyone is going to have it. But everybody does need to have it if we're going to live sustainably on the planet. What is my plan? I mean, my plan is to get funding from the film to do small-scale experiments to see if I can cancel out even 25% of the gravity for a motor vehicle, and that will be step one. You know, step two, try to get to 50%. I wouldn't want to reduce any more than 50 or 60% of a vehicle that has tires, because if it gets too light, when you hit the brakes, it's not going to stop. It's going to go skimming across the surface of the highway. So, you know, the next level of this, it obviously gets into trying to, you know, defy gravity 100% and revolutionize. And you think of all those Star Wars movies, you know, when you see those things hovering around and how much visually we take that for granted in these films, we haven't figured that out yet. It's so simple. And I think that is the key. That is the key. It's so simple that when once people know how the blueprints of how this thing actually works, it's not going to be something you can control. We're just going to have to accept. This is one of the problems that a caveman mentality kind of has. They think that, okay, if everyone has anti-gravity, the oil companies say, well, I can't sell you oil anymore. What am I going to do? What's going to be the next commodity? If energy is not going to be a commodity anymore that's worth very much, because anyone can stick up a solar panel and, you know, once you can use that electricity to cancel out gravity, tiny little ion thrusters will send your little Jetsons mobile at, you know, 500 miles an hour, no problem. Once you have that, what's the next commodity? Well, if you give 100,000 people the ability to go interstellar, what are they going to discover out there? What commodities and jewels and other planets in our galaxy are they going to discover that could benefit and could be traded in a free marketplace for all of the interstellar community and humanity? Obviously, if you get rid of that control, that we're going to go to a much better place. We're going to find things out there that are going to benefit us on such a profound level. We'll have new commodities. There will be new things that we can buy, sell, and trade. So that fear of getting out of the dark ages and not being able to get off the planet, you know, that will we will triumph over that. And we have to do it together. I really believe that, again, it's so simple that it's going to be like a light bulb. Oh, yeah, anybody can do a light bulb now, right? Well, when you were the guy who invented it, it wasn't so easy.
All right, David. Well, I hope you're right, because if we don't find something pretty soon, there will be no escape. John in Georgia, you're on with David Cerita.
Hey, David. Hey, Art. How you guys doing?
All right.
Good. How are you?
All right. Hey, Art. Love your show, man. Listen, I just got one simple question. I've heard you on the show with Art before a lot, David, and I've heard you talk about your film From Here to Andromeda many times, but I never heard you mention Mr. Bushman before. So my question is, all the times you've talked about your film before, why haven't you mentioned Mr. Bushman? How come he hasn't come to the forefront of the discussion? And basically, that's my question.
All right.
Well, basically, because as I've been talking about the film, I've been filming. I just finished editing today. It's a four-hour film, which means it has four one-hour segments or parts. You know, people aren't going to watch it all at once. And this thing really moves. There's never a dull moment. It's moving. So that's the answer to the question. I didn't know I was going to get an interview with Boyd Bushman. I didn't, you know, in the 8-month period or so that I've known him, I didn't understand what he was going to give me until I got on a plane, flew to Dallas and met him and went, oh my God, you know, this guy is giving me everything here. So that answers it.
All right. Pete in Seattle, you're on with David Cerita. Hi.
Yes, David, Art. Do you happen to know what came of the Disclosure Project with National Press Conference? In 2001 of May, a panel of experts from military, intelligence, government, corporate, scientific witnesses came forward, and they were going to testify their sightings and facts before Congress. Do you happen to know what came of that?
You're talking of the Stephen Greer Project, right?
Correct.
Well, of course, we had Stephen Greer on several times. David, have you been in contact with Stephen Greer with reference to some of the material you've talked about tonight?
No, I haven't. I met him when he was just starting out. That's the only time I met him, in Santa Barbara. And I remember you said that on a show before. I've made attempts to contact him, and he never writes me back. So I would love to talk to Stephen. We just never have done that. I don't know why. I've made my attempts. He's never made a single attempt to talk to me. So I believe the secret to zero-point energy is a combination of canceling out the forces down towards the zero point as well as increasing the energy that you apply. But it's more about transformation of mass in the zero-point equation than it is about trying to get more and more energy, higher and higher levels of energy. because you just encounter more and more inertia, and you can't go faster than the speed of light when you approach it that way. If you don't approach the problem with canceling out the forces of gravity and inertia, then you're never going to get beyond the speed of light. And the speed of light isn't even fast enough to get anywhere. So you really got to go way beyond that. And that's where the 7th, 8th, and 9th force get more interesting than anti-gravity.
All right. Don in Omaha, Nebraska. Your turn with David.
Good evening, Art, and good evening, David. I hope
evening.
You're both doing well.
Good evening.
My question is kind of a brief two-part question. First of all, to what extent, David, do you think that big oil, or whatever you want to call it, has kept us from seeing this kind of system before? And the other part of my question is, do you think, either one of you, I guess, that big oil possibly through this administration is making a last big grab for money because they can see this kind of thing coming down the pike a little ways?
They can see the Egyptian-like symbols on the wall, as it were.
David? Well, we can already see the end of oil. The question is, can oil see its end and be smart enough to invest in the future? You know, like I said, their fear is they're not going to have a commodity because we rely on goods and services in this country to move dollars, that they don't see any more commodities that they can sell us every day. But if you consider 100,000 people with spaceships going to the stars, there will be commodities beyond commodities that we will be able to transform our lives with. So they don't. The fear is unjustified at this point. We have to get beyond this point. We all die, or we all succeed. And the only way we're going to succeed is to get beyond oil. So these people have to stop threatening and intimidating, progress. I mean, this is the country where every great invention happened first, and it's going to happen again. And the next big revolution is going to happen, and it's going to be anti-gravity.
To what degree do you think big oil has suppressed whatever's out there?
When I personally was raising money for helium-3 fusion for Bogdan Castle, Maglich, and Glenn Seaborg and the whole gang, and they were very urgent about it. They would not even let me off the phone. They said, you do not understand who we are. And I said, oh, yes, I do. And they in 1989, in 1990 when I was doing that, back then, we didn't see the end of oil. Today, we can see the end of oil. So the question is, are they going to be barbarians and prevent us from evolving?
Okay, let's move to Michael in Chicago. You're on with David Sarita. Hello.
Hello, Art. Hello, David.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I'd like to confirm the NEPA saucer, the nuclear energy for propulsion of aircraft within the military-industrial complex. The way I created that illustration, David, is when I contacted that top-secret Q magic clearance engineer who worked for General Electric. He specifically told me about that aircraft. He also mentioned that it was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Hangar Number 4, Bay E. This was 1960. And so I basically asked him, and the way this came about is, many of your listeners may recall Leonard Stringfield and his briefing documents with respect to crash retrievals. And I got a hold of a rare copy of one of his manuscripts that he sent to J. Allen Hynek in Chicago. And he, you'll notice that he never released the names of his contacts on all his briefing papers. But in this particular one, he did. And he didn't black out the names of the people on this list. And I was able to look and read the names under what he had blacked out. And so I called these people on this contact list. And this gentleman, who is a retired General Electric engineer working on this program in 1960, he was on that list. And that's how this illustration came to be.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, did he, when he spoke to... with respect to Roswell, did he give you any indication that it might have been a disinformation program from Air Force OSI?
No, I mean, I've seen FBI documents that state that it was a crash weather balloon, and I believe those are disinformation for the FBI so that they would not have access. So there are disinformation documents out there, that testify that, it was a weather balloon and little, dummies and that sort of thing. But
okay.
There are so many blurry lines here. I I am just going by a man with high, high credibility who has a track record a mile long who said he personally knows the person who engineered the nuclear-powered flying saucer. So the diagram, in a way, is irrelevant. He's personalized it. The second part is that about Roswell, that he knows the Navy doctor who treated the pilot who told the story of how he shot this thing down in 1947. So considering the credibility of your expert witnesses, I would say there's a very high degree of probability that everything they're saying is true. And
right.
They did describe alien bodies.
So, yep, that's yeah. Right. All right. Jeffrey, in North Hollywood, California, you're on with David.
Hey, last caller, looks like. How you guys doing? I'm sort of ironic that I live right down the street, or actually I have two places where that UFO crashed in North Hollywood on Magnolia Boulevard, believe it.
Really?
Yeah. Actually, I have photographs of that UFO that crashed. It was the size of a large turkey platter. And it was, you know, the Project Have Blue, because a lot of UFOs have this blue aura around it. This thing was glowing with a blue aura around it when it hit this guy's wall in an apartment on Magnolia near Colfax.
Yeah, I have that in my film. And the interesting thing about that saucer is it's aluminum. It's 30 inches in diameter. And Boyd Bushman says aluminum, and he demonstrates this right in front of me, interface with certain fields actually taps into the sixth or anti-gravity force. There's something about aluminum. And as I've gone over the Majestic documents, there are so many accounts of eyewitnesses describing the saucers to look like polished aluminum. So the question in that North Hollywood case is, they say it's a 16-year-old kid who testifies that he built this thing, and it produced anti-gravity. It had a radio tube mounted in the center of it. The question is, where's this kid today, and where did he get the information? And his saucer crashes on July 9th, 1947, days within the Roswell incident. So what is going on?
David, we are out of time. What about your film? When is it available? Are all four parts now available, or what?
All four parts are being delivered this week to the duplicating house, so we're taking orders now. We should start shipping in a couple of weeks. So from here to Andromeda.com is where you can order the film. And it's 4 hours long. There's a lot of material here. It's all shot in high definition. It's beautiful quality, lots of graphics, and incredible interviews. Robert Thurman, Tibetan Book of the Dead translator for the Dalai Lama, is in the film. David Phelps, professor of psychology at Santa Monica College. Boyd Bushman.
All right. We've got to hold it there, David. Thank you, my friend.
Right,
incredible program. Good night.
Good night.
And to all of you out there, until next weekend, I'm Art Bell. Good night, all.